23 minutes past midday. Well, there are ongoing concerns, and obviously for very good reason, for frontline workers, from abuse to threatening behaviour, and it should never, ever be part of their job. To talk about this and what could perhaps be done about it to help them is Scott Taylor, Specialist Security Consultant with the Southern Cross Group. Good afternoon to you, Scott.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm good, thank you very much. I mean, the recent situation we've seen around the world with the rioting and the you know, people just ripping towns apart and that sort of thing. Sitting in your lounge room watching this happen and looking at these frontline people thinking, what the heck is going to happen to them? It's a very frightening situation.
Yeah, across all of the frontline workers. So they deal with some very difficult circumstances between security, healthcare workers. They're often dealing with people on the worst days of their lives and sometimes affected by drugs, alcohol, emotion, and they have to try and de-escalate a situation and keep themselves safe and well at the same time.
How can you be trained to deal with that? Human nature doesn't allow, really, you don't accept being insulted, spat on, abused, pushed around, and you're trying to help them, you know, in most cases. I mean, how do you train people to have to deal with this?
That's a great question, Jenny. There's a couple of points with that. Firstly, in the occupational element, part of it is understanding that, in essence, sometimes people are venting towards the authority you represent in a position. So depersonalising it is one aspect for helping deal and cope with it. But still some basic conflict de-escalation and even identification of conflict triggers is very, very important. Another part that's, because there's some level of training given with police, ambulance, security, on some of these elements, but there's not enough, in my opinion, what we like to call reality acquisition or stress inoculation training, which means giving them some of the training in a semi-realistic environment, because dealing with the individual circumstance is one part, but the social and emotional elements of even dealing with the after effects is another. And we need to, provide better support to help, to help them well.
There's no two ways about it. I just wish there was an easy answer to this. I mean, the whole thing is with human behaviour is you get to a breaking point. Some get to it quickly, some it takes a lot longer. With Black Lives Matter, as horrific as that situation was and what we did see visually, you do stop and think, how far have these people been pushed and abused? And I mean, do you understand? Do you get that from these people that you've met?
Well, from a lot of the feedback and from speaking to people also globally that are involved in different elements and circumstances, part of what we see is obviously some edited and snapshot elements of some of the parts that are going on as well. But they're dealing with very stressful and very traumatic circumstances. And often for with those, some of the decisions on the actions that first responders have to take have to happen in a very rapid manner, because they're dealing with somebody and the situations can be volatile and they can change so rapidly. So they have to be watching out for changes in tone, body language, behaviour, a whole range of other elements. Yeah. And they're making the best decision they can towards the best outcome in that environment.
There's a fine line, though, isn't there, Scott, where you have to be able to control the situation, but not to be seen to being very harmful to that person. I mean, this is where I find it really hard for them to understand or to know and accept how far they can go. I mean, what can they use? Pepper spray? I mean, what rights have they got?
Yeah, that's another great question. So, firstly, with understanding, there's a concept basically of the force continuum, which in essence in circumstances is making sure that any use of force used in the circumstance is aligned with, so equal or just one level above the level of resistance. And so part of with that, finding that balance point, but it's got to take into account the totality of the circumstances known to the person dealing with that. And sometimes when we see these 10-second Instagram videos and other parts, we may be seeing snapshot elements, but you're not seeing all of the lead-up information that's led them to go to that, that's got to that decision with how they've had to respond and react. And that's why the effective training and even other deterrents, like I'm a big supporter of body-worn cameras as well. There's a range of things that can help, but there's no silver bullet. These are shifting sands, throughout these conflict items as well.
The world's in turmoil at the moment, Scott. I've got to stop watching these documentaries from around the world. They're really quite upsetting to think that we as human beings are behaving like this to each other. It's absolutely awful. And people are very unhappy, I get that, and they don't like their circumstances. I get that as well. But, it's anarchy, really, out there. I know I'm concentrating on this a bit too much at the moment, but it seems to me like a lot of people have just given up, and so they lose control of social etiquette and social behaviour, don't they?
Yeah, they do, and there's, I suppose, a couple of points with that. Same as when you see after sort of different situations or offences that may occur, and when they speak to somebody's neighbour and say, oh, you know, he was such a nice guy. Mm-hmm. Part of this is, I suppose, image versus integrity, you know, and character. But the other part as well, in some of those circumstances, you've got, you know, mob mentality and groupthink. So there's a popular saying, anonymity breeds bravado. And in some of these circumstances, aside from what individual feelings and thoughts they may have, people can also get caught up with a variety of these elements. And so their behaviour definitely adjusts, things they normally wouldn't do individually. And so these first responders are dealing with that, plus a whole range of other factors.
On a daily basis, they say goodbye to their family, go off and meet with the dregs of the earth, behaving disgustingly. It's just, we ask so much of them.
Yeah, and there's some other parts as well. If you look from the healthcare point of view, there's some staggering statistics with various states where, you know, up to 50 to 60% increases in assaults on the frontline workers. And realistically, you couldn't have said it better. These people are normal family and community members going out in these situations and having to deal with that. So they deal with some very hard situations indeed.
Very difficult for the families, knowing that their father, brother or son or whatever or uncle is even out there doing all of this all the time. I mean, late at night there are murders, there are stabbings, there are shootings, there are drugs, it just goes on and on. Now, body cams, we've seen a little bit more vision from body cams, and the only thing I would imagine that would help is if something had to go to court and they had visual evidence. Would that be correct?
Well, there's lots of different studies that have been done on different elements with the body cams, but I suppose my thoughts on this is I don't believe there's been a very thorough, holistic study on the effects with some true reality acquisition training with the use, and also for a true deterrent factor. Certain people, and it's in those large crowd and, you know, that mob mentality type environment can be different, but with some of the individual smaller groups where we've all seen a variety of circumstances occur, firstly, they can be a deterrent because the initial statement of, you know, letting you know that this is going to be audio and visually recorded for things as well is a deterrent in itself.
Yeah.
The other part is it shows lead-up circumstances and information that sometimes in different environments we refer and look back to CCTV and a range of others. That's a top-down approach that doesn't necessarily show the clenching jaw, the changes in stance, the change in verbiage, and a range of other indicators to show that conflict may be escalating. Mm-hmm. And that's all part of the totality of circumstance that first responders have to deal with.
Yeah, with that, we can only imagine. It's all very easy for us to sit back in our armchairs and watch the news at night and see and pick on these people frontline having to deal with it, particularly the policemen, I think. I mean, when you look at the frontliners in emergency wards at hospitals having to deal with drug-addicted people coming in, screaming and wanting to hurt them, and they're just trying to help them as well, that in itself is just a frightening situation. And what protection do they have?
Yeah, well, obviously, police have different elements at their disposal compared to, you know, healthcare workers and security as well, which generically, security basically have the same powers of arrest and use of force as a general citizen do. That's why it's so much important on the right training, on proactively managing situations, on being aware immediately of any escalating conflict situations and best positioning themselves. It's a very, very difficult circumstance because they're having to make extremely rapid circumstances, decisions based on these changing circumstances under stress and duress.
Absolutely. In your line of work, Scott, I would imagine you've spoken to people that put themselves out there online. I mean, you've got these young women as police women out there putting themselves out there in front line. What discussions or what do they actually say about the work that they do?
The feedback from speaking to quite a broad cross-section of people, because one of the other duties that I do is expert witness work, so looking at situations that have occurred or use of force situations and different interactions, and then doing a review of those circumstances to make sure if the use of force was lawful, justifiable, reasonable, proportionate, but also, you know, the human elements, you know, what was the training, induction and everything surrounding that. So sadly, some of the conversations I have with, you know, police, with healthcare and a range of others, is a shrug of the shoulders and saying, oh, this is part of what we do. So there's sadly, some level of acceptance. And I think that's a sad indictment on the current circumstances when they say, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's just something we deal with. Spitting and getting spat on and assaults and others, it's, yeah, it's something we deal with. And, yeah. You know, we need to change that, definitely.
I'm surprised that people put their hands up to go into the police force sometimes. And I know there is quite a large dropout rate from time to time. And I can't imagine mentally how they go home and switch off.
That's a really, really important point, probably more important than what you even realise, because of those points that I was saying about the, that reality acquisition and how that prepares them for total circumstances. That's a big part of it as well, those coping mechanisms, dealing with the stress. If they're seeing violent encounters, volatile situations, they need to decompress with that. They need the support for the coping mechanisms with what they've gone through.
How do they get that support?
Well, with a variety of employers, they have different elements of the employee assistance program, and part of it is there is items of the training and dealing with conflict, self-management under pressure and duress that are covered. I just feel that across the whole spectrum, with police, with healthcare, with security for things as well, and corrective services, we need to do more. They need more support and training for with these parts. And not only is the additional training and other parts going to help them deal with circumstances better, it's going to help them deal with post-circumstance much better as well.
Yeah. When the idea of putting CCTV cameras around the Perth and, city and suburbs was first mooted, everyone was, oh, it's taken away our privacy, darn it. I, from day one, I thought, put up as many cameras as you can out there. So now if you go to this next stage that you've suggested, and let's just hope that can be looked at very seriously, this has got to get out there that they're going to be watched even close up. If they're going to misbehave, and they'll get to learn that those cameras are there on them the whole time.
And part of it is also about, like, for when they will be used. It's not, it's a completely different perspective. A situation occurs when there's a use of force situation with any of the different first responders we've mentioned. Sadly, in today's society, that'll be edited up, and a snapshot on a certain perspective will be up on Instagram and YouTube and shared with a variety of commentary and, the subsequent decisions for, I'm going to say armchair academics.
That's right. It's true.
Pretty rapidly. If there was the situation were flipped, and if first responders had the same freedom of flexibility and an Instagram channel of lead up behavior and conduct, I wonder if that would be like a better form of deterrent, if people actually realized that they were going to be, had their details shared on these lead up circumstances, if that would be a better behavior deterrent.
Yeah, I think we've all got to look at ourselves very carefully the minute we feel that we should criticize people that are out there trying to protect all of us, and that's exactly what they're trying to do. Now, you've consulted and lectured throughout the Middle East and the United States of America, and you've worked with government, industry, regulators and industries across Australia and the territories and that sort of thing. Let's look at overseas just very quickly, if you don't mind, about controlling and policing. In the Middle East, it has to be a completely different scene, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's definitely a range of different factors and perspectives with the framework for the training and also the management on how different elements train with use of force, conflict items are handled. Also different elements as well with regards to the equipment that they have access to and processes there. So I suppose my response to, because they are so vastly different, is there's some core fundamental pieces that are exactly the same, and that comes to enhancing situational awareness and that environmental awareness, focus on really noticing those changes in behaviour and conduct to pick up these escalating circumstances.
Yeah.
Controlling your own personal response. I mean, that's another really difficult point, because some of the people in these first responder roles have got to deal with these personal responses. And pride and ego is a natural response sometimes in defensive situations. They have to be so emotionally intelligent to understand, deal with and process what they're dealing with before, as part of their responses as well. It's incredible.
Yeah. With technology as it is and instant news reports around the world and crossovers, here, there and there, everywhere in the world, we're seeing so much more of it, right in our faces in our living rooms these days, Scott. So I think everybody needs to know a little bit more about what we can do to help the locals here as well. So just very quickly then, what about the cameras? Is it a financial issue? Have the government looked at it?
So they've definitely been tried in different elements. Different police areas have tried them with different success. To my opinion is, I think, both domestically and abroad, there's never been a complete study focusing on the deterrent factor, especially in individual and small groups, and when coupled with the right training. While there's no silver bullet with any of these things, using the use of the body cameras as a deterrent, and obviously having that lead up information coupled with that right training, that stress inoculation training, I think is crucial towards helping keep our people safe.
Let's hope so. Thank you so much for your expertise. Great to speak to you, Scott.
Thanks very much, Andy.
Thank you. Scott Taylor joining us.